Today is Kevin Lee Dawson versus Commonwealth. Mr. Sansone, do you wish to reserve any time for rebuttal?
Judge Petty, I would probably like to reserve half of my time.
That'd be 7.5 minutes by my calculation.
Sir.
That's fine. You may begin.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, I'm Joseph Sansone, and I represent Mr. Dawson in this matter. As you know, Mr. Dawson was convicted based on an order out of Pennsylvania County. It was one of the form orders that used to be issued in these cases. And there is a show cause order that indicates that the matter should have been served, but there's no indication of service on Mr. Dawson. And the order that is the habitual offender order in this case says he was not present. A party
Mr. Sansone, who has the burden of establishing that the prior proceeding, habitual offender proceeding, was somehow invalid for lack of jurisdiction over the person?
Judge Petty, I believe the Commonwealth does because they have the burden of proving every element of the offense. And in this case, the order, the existence of the habitual offender order, is an element of the offense, which includes producing a valid order. And as the Kelly versus Stames case said, that an order, a void order, is a nullity and is without effect from the moment it comes into existence. So,
if that's your position, how do you distinguish Clements? Because that case seems to be directly on point, and it indicates that the Commonwealth can simply rely on the presumption of regularity.
Yes, sir. But I think that there can't be a presumption of regularity to an order that has no effect from the moment of its existence.
But that's not what Clements says. Clements is directly on point.
But, Your Honor, I think Kelly versus Stames stands for the proposition that an order that's void from the beginning, I think that's the proper rule that should be followed in this case, considering the fact that I don't think they, in Clements, considered the fact that all statutes are strictly construed against the Commonwealth. And I think that would be the standard that needs to be applied in a case such as this, because
Mr. Sansone, this is Judge Beals. On the order from that Judge Alexander signed in December of 94, at the bottom of the order, he says it is further ordered that a copy of this order be mailed to the Department of Motor Vehicles of Virginia. A copy be served on the defendant. And so if there's nothing presented to the court to show that that didn't happen, why isn't there a presumption of regularity that
because the
public officials did the job that they indicated was that needed to be done, and that we know that DMV has a record of it? Why did not put forward anything about the fact that to show that defendant didn't receive it or wasn't served? Why are we to assume he did not?
Well, Your Honor, I think the issue is not whether the order was served after it was entered. The issue is, was the show cause order. Are you speaking of the show cause order, Your Honor?
I think right now, let's see, I'm looking at the final order. So I see your point on that, but let me just cut to the chase on this. Why does your client not have actual notice in 2014 when he pleads guilty to driving while his license was revoked because he's an habitual offender? Why doesn't he have actual notice if that's the point, that he needs to receive notice that he's a habitual offender when he's stopped that time and he is told he's an habitual offender and then he pleads guilty to it?
Well, I don't think the issue is did he have actual notice of the void order. I think he did have actual notice of the void order, but whoever represented him at that point didn't realize that there was a jurisdictional defect with the first order. And so what he has notice of after the entry of the order is not, we say, important in this case. This is a common problem in civil judgments, money judgments, things of that nature. If you don't have jurisdiction in those orders, then you simply can't proceed, and the order is void from the minute it's entered. You can't proceed with a judgment. You can't proceed with a levy.
But if we take your argument to its logical extension, assuming that he's never been served from the, you know, from that show cause order in 1994, then he could go out and drive today with his license being revoked, or tomorrow or next week, until he's somehow served. None of those would be an offense, right?
Well, he's clearly driving suspended. I've said that from the very beginning. I don't think he has an operator's license. The question is he an habitual offender subject to a valid habitual offender order? And the only thing that I think is important in this case is what happened from the time that the show cause order was drawn up until such time as the actual order adjudicating him an habitual offender came into place.
Well, Mr. Sanson, I agree completely with your argument in terms of the order is void if it was not properly served on him, that the adjudicating court never acquired in personam jurisdiction, and that's what Slaughter versus Commonwealth, with the case you rely on, stands for. But in Slaughter, the record of the trial included the record of the habitual offender proceeding, and the defendant testified, along with his wife, that he was not a resident of Tennessee at the time the out-of-state service of process was attempted. So there was affirmative evidence in that case that lawful notice had not been provided. But in this case, none of those factors are present. The record of the habitual offender proceeding was not introduced, and no one testified. So
Judge Penny,
Clements clearly says that the Commonwealth may rely on a presumption that everything was done properly at the adjudication, and that's incumbent upon the defendant to overcome that presumption. And that's where I get stuck on this case.
Yes, sir. Judge Patty, if you look at the order in the Slaughter case, they say that that he was not present and had been properly served, and they recite the fact of his residency in that order, which is what we generally do in all civil orders. We say that the matter came to be heard and the answer was filed, or that service was made. Of course, when you file an answer, then you don't have to worry about the service issues in general civil litigation. But you do have some sort of recital in the order, and then the rule comes into play that recitals in the order are considered to be a verity, but jurisdiction is not assumed. But in this case, there's just a bare statement that he was not present and no recital as to how service was affected as it
but
was.
Wasn't the judge presiding over the adjudication required to verify that it had subject matter jurisdiction, I'm sorry, that it had in personam jurisdiction of the defendant? That's part of the adjudication process.
Well, Your Honor, that can be, that should be, but it's never been considered in civil law that service has been acquired over an individual just by the mere recital and the fact that somebody has authorized the sheriff to serve a paper, and then thereafter, when a person doesn't appear for, say, an eviction notice or a money judgment or an automobile accident case, that just because somebody requested service, whoever it may be, an officer of the court themselves, and that no service was ever produced, nor did the person answer, that's never been considered a completed case where in personam jurisdiction has been acquired. This really goes straight back to the civil proceedings and the fact that it's a burden on the Commonwealth to prove every element of its offense and that all these statutes are strictly construed against them.
Yeah, but that's a good argument, but how do I write around Clements? I mean, help me write that. Clements says, quoting Thompson, as a general principle, when a prior order of a court with jurisdiction to hear a matter is collaterally attacked, the Commonwealth is entitled to a presumption of regularity which attends the prior judgment, because every act of a court of competent jurisdiction shall be presumed to have done rightly until the
Your Honor, that would change. I'm sorry, Your Honor.
That's the money quote.
That would change all civil law. We would have such a vast shakeup of civil law by simply saying that you can rely upon a court order that that is there, whether proper jurisdiction is established, service is established, an answer has been filed. Doesn't matter. If the court enters the order, then that's the end of it, and there's no further inquiry.
Mr. Sansone, this is Judge O'Brien. Your contention is that that order declaring him needed to say in the body of the order that he was properly served or that he was present to be a valid order?
Yes, because there has to be some basic recital in the order to establish the general civil principles that there's proper jurisdiction before the court. And that was stated in Slaughter. That's why they had to put the witness on to contradict what was stated in the order.
Mr. Sansone, you're well into your rebuttal, and I apologize for not bringing it up early. You can continue or reserve as you wish.
Judge Petty, I'll reserve, and thank you, and I realized I was going over.
Ms. Campbell?
Good afternoon. May it please the Court, Aaron Campbell on behalf of the Commonwealth. This is a collateral attack on this 1994 order. We are asking that the Court should affirm because the defendant has not presented any evidence to rebut the presumption that that order was valid. As the Court's already talked about, that's was recited in Clements and in a number of other cases, that the Commonwealth is entitled to a presumption of correctness whenever an order is collaterally attacked as void.
Does that rule apply, as Mr. Sansone has brought up, the context of an enforcement of a default judgment? I couldn't find any case law on that, but it would seem to me that this being a civil proceeding, that concept would carry over. Who has the burden in the context of a personal injury accident? Who has the burden of establishing that there was no service of process in the underlying judgment?
I'm not well versed in civil law, so I would guess that the person challenging the order as void would have the burden to put forth evidence that what was done was not correct. But that I'm frankly just
out of my league.
What we do know is that at least from the case law from this court is that that the Commonwealth does have this presumption of correctness, and the defendant has a burden to put on it forth evidence to rebut that presumption. That's what happened in the Slaughter case. The defendant, he moved to quash. He put on testimony to show that he was served at the wrong address, and therefore the record showed that there was a defect in the service of process. It's not what we have here. We don't have any evidence that was put forth. We just have counsel's arguments, which, as the court's well aware, is not evidence. The Clements case is directly on point. In that case, the defendant made essentially the same argument that there was no evidence that the DMV commissioner had complied with the notice requirements, and therefore the order was void. And this court said, I think rightfully so, that this order was valid because there is a presumption that public officials will follow the law. We must presume that the Pennsylvania court in 1994 followed the law in serving the defendant. We must also presume.
Here, Ms. This is Judge Beals. You're talking about the November 17th, 1994 show cause order, where it says a copy of this order shall be served on said Kevin Lee Dawson in the manner prescribed by law, together with a copy of the certified abstract of convictions record of the Division of Motor Vehicles.
Yes, Your Honor. I must presume that was followed. Unless we have evidence to the contrary. We don't have evidence to the contrary, so we must presume that the service was followed.
And what about actual notice here? There's a case from 2015 in which this court in Stafford versus Commonwealth, Judge Humphrey said, even if Stafford never received the revocation order, the DMV transcript reflects was sent, he still had actual notice of his status as an habitual offender on the date when he was charged with his first offense of driving as an habitual offender in the Chesapeake General District Court. At that time, Stafford never disputed his habitual offender status or that he had received notice of such determination. Nevertheless, he continued to drive in the Commonwealth.
Yeah, I don't know if the order was invalid in the first place, whether actual notice cures it.
This is not a question of whether he had notice of the adjudication. This is a question whether the court had in personam jurisdiction over him in the first place, had jurisdiction to enter the order.
Right. I think that's the issue that the appellant has raised. Is that?
No, that's the issue he's raised. But actual notice means nothing here. Actual notice was a habitual offender when he committed this act on March 10th, 2015. On May 13th, 2014, he'd been convicted of the same thing.
Yeah, the one thing I do wonder about, and this is one thing I pondered about, was whether or not when he was convicted for his first offense, habitual offender, did that waive any argument that he had regarding jurisdiction, because he basically consented to the jurisdiction of the court.
How can he consent to jurisdiction of the court? That proceeding is over and done with the entry of the adjudication order, and if the court did not have jurisdiction to enter the order, whether the defendant knew it was entered or not doesn't solve the problem.
Right, and I'm just was pondering whether or not that could have cured any jurisdictional defects. I'm not sure it does. But to get back on track, and I'm not sure I've actually answered your question about actual notice, whether it cures it. I don't think we'd need to even go there, because the defendant has not put forth any evidence to show that he was not served properly when the court in 1994 convicted him of habitual offender. We must presume that the court entered that order rightfully, even though he failed to appear. We can't just presume, based on the order not saying that there was service, that there wasn't service. I think that would, the defendant said it would change civil law, but I think his argument would change civil law, because it would open up all sorts of collateral attacks on orders if they didn't have all this magic language in it that I don't think, frankly, are in orders. Unless the court has any questions, I would ask that the court affirm based on the fact that the defendant has not put forth evidence to rebut the presumption that the 1994 order was valid.
I have nothing
further.
Nothing,
thank you. I have nothing. Thank you. Mr. Sanzone, you've got about 4 minutes, 4.5 minutes left in rebuttal.
Thank you, Judge Petty. In fact, all those safeguards and presumptions are present in civil orders. And if they're not present, then the civil order is not capable of being enforced, be that for judgment, eviction, hospital bills, whatever.
Did you find any case to support that argument, Sanzone? And I looked, and I wasn't able to find any appellate court cases that suggest that the defendant did not have the burden of establishing lack of jurisdiction. Anything you could point to that I could take a look at?
Judge, I think it's sort of like proving is water wet. It's such a basic concept in civil law that I don't think that there's been any significant challenge to the fact that you have to establish that an answer has been filed or that service has been given for an order to have any effect at all. I just think it's so basic that there's been no person to come forward and say that just because the court issued the order, somehow or another it has effect. This happens routinely in general district court, with so many papers
against
her.
We're talking here about a collateral attack on the order. We're not talking about a direct attack.
Well, yes, Your Honor, I understand. Well, collaterally, a lot of those judgments are attacked after they're entered, and they're routinely set aside for lack of service. But the order itself in this case is the evidence of noncompliance. So the additional evidence that would be required.
The December 1924 order is the evidence of noncompliance?
It is, because it says that he was not present, and it doesn't recite how the court acquired in personam jurisdiction. It, as in Slaughter, where Slaughter said that in personam jurisdiction was acquired by proper service, and Judge Petty, with respect to Clement and the DMV commissioner, I believe that presumptions of regularity concerning commissioners and what they do with records and things of that nature, and what's stated in the Code of Virginia with respect to them and regularity of public officials' acts, is different than courts, because a judge doesn't have that same status as an employee of the state. There are many more parts to what a circuit court judge must do, or any judge must do. And so for that reason, we say that when it says he was not present, it has to be a recital. They have the burden of proof. It has to be construed against them, and it's a void order from the beginning, and then no presumption of regularity applies.
So what do you say this order should have said in order to make it a proper order that's not void?
It must say what all civil orders say, whether they be personal injury, contract, or whatever, that the party was present, or that the party answered, or that the party was properly served. One of those three things.
So you're saying, because it doesn't say on December 12, 1994, the defendant Kevin Lee Dawson, having failed to appear pursuant to a show cause order, et cetera, et cetera, or having been properly served. It just needs to recite that.
It has to be, that's right, having been served with the show cause order issued, or the show cause order in this case, just like Slaughter said. Slaughter was valid on its face until someone came forward and put on evidence that the
but they came forward and put on evidence. That's the big difference, isn't it?
No, Slaughter was valid on its face because it recited exactly what I'm saying. It said that proper service had been affected. So they put on evidence to show that it was void. If there's no recital of a service, just as there was in Slaughter, then the order is void on its face.
There'll be a lot of orders that are void on their face.
Your Honor, that may be true, but you can't change the basic tenets of civil law, because if this were to be applied to contract situations and suits that were served for ejectment, things of that nature, it would completely turn. And as I said to Judge Petty, it's like proving water is wet. It's such a basic concept. It's embodied in the rules that you have to serve it and it has to be answered.
All right, Mr. Sanzone, your time has expired. We thank you for your argument, and we will adjourn and reconvene in conference.
Thank you, Your Honors, and it's a pleasure to appear before you.
Thank you,
Your Honors.
To have you back before us, both of you.
Right, thank you.
Thank you.